Mr. Newman, Reel 7. I just want to drop something in now. See, from my impression of what you've said, that the only time you really came under fire was under shell fire or fire, direct fire, was the time you were wounded at Veer. Now, that isn't actually the case,
no,
is it?
So no, no,
could you talk a bit about that?
It's difficult, in some ways, this is difficult to explain. We were a tank regiment, and I was not a tank crew, I was a maintenance bot. And yes, we were under fire. We were under fire nearly every day. But I wasn't in action. I wasn't in a position where I was able to fire back. But nearly every night, where we went into lager, every night when we went into lager, the tank would be parked round or they'd be around there. And we would be shelled or bombed or something. You know, we would be under fire, yes.
Was it mainly shell fire? Because I thought you mainly had air superiority, didn't
we? We did have air superiority, but we did occasionally get the odd bot coming over, hopefully. But mainly shell fire, yes.
And what was it like under shell fire for you?
Difficult to explain it once again, because it was so unlike what my father had described from the First World War. Because we got under... All we did, we'd be slit trenches and we'd run the tanks and whatever ranks over the slit trenches. And all we'd do was, when the shelling started, we'd just climb underneath the tank. And generally speaking, unless the tank above that we were underneath got hit, we were safe.
And would you have tanks about you, though, when you were at headquarters?
There would be some tanks about around you.
Was this mainly at B Company that you got on shell fire? Were you under shell fire later on when you were at headquarters?
Oh, all the time, yes.
So both?
Both of them, yeah. Once, when I was with B Squadron, before I got wounded, we did get bombed by a couple of American Thunderbolts. We shoved the streamers up and put the yellow sheets out, and they'd say that we were British. And 20 minutes later, they came back and dropped 200 Chesterfields and said, sorry. And then we'd done this, and I never did. And that happened once again while we were in Germany.
So they
got bombed by the Americans.
Did you feel badly about that? Or did the fact that...
This is probably a little bit slanderous. Once before I came home from the Middle East and when I was still in the Middle East, we were acting as guards on a prisoner of war unit for just over a few days. And people were talking. And there's a German officer who once said to me, not just to me, we were talking about who was going to win the war because it was pretty obvious to us that we were going to win. And this German officer said, no. I don't think so. I think we'll win. We have the Italians. You have the Americans. The Americans will do more damage to you than the Italians will do to us. And I think that is a general attitude.
So there's a bit of contempt for American troops and American aircraft.
Yeah, really. We didn't. We thought if they were on their own, they wouldn't be much use. And if there's a lot of them, few numbers would do it. But they didn't seem to have much initiative on their own. And
now, you were moving through into Germany after crossing the Rhine, and you said you had more repair work to do. As an electrician, I presume.
Yeah,
what sort of thing were you up to?
Well, by then, the soft vehicles particularly had been travelling for a lot longer time. They were older, and they were breaking down more often.
So this is the lorries?
Yeah. And so there was more maintenance work to do on there. It wasn't repair work particularly, it was maintenance work.
And would you just do the electrician's job, or would you help with the other stuff if it was there?
If I could help with the other, I wasn't a fitter, but if I could help with other things, yes, I would. And I'll tell you a bit more about that in a minute, when we got on a bit farther into Germany.
So it's the lorries that were there?
The lorries were main, so we did get the occasional thing with tanks. Usually losing their tracks. Now that didn't affect me, but I would help put the things back on again.
How would you do it then?
We'd lay the track out, run the tank onto it, put it on, then the tank forwards over the water, and then just joining up. It's a simple thing. It's time consuming, but it's very simple. It's like mending a boat chain.
And what about as you move forward into Germany? What state was the country in, and what reception did you get?
It was a shambles. Literally, it was a shambles.
In what way?
The amount of damage that had been done by shelling, by aircraft bombing. They were towns and villages which were completely destroyed. Oddly enough, we didn't get the animosity from the civilians, which I would have expected.
How did they behave?
Some of them were resentful, yeah.
And how did they show that?
Well, there's a feeling more than anything else. I didn't go away to swear at us or anything like that, because they were in no position to be really awkward. But, I mean, it was very clear that they felt the same way as we would have felt if somebody else was occupying their country. If somebody else was occupying our country. I mean, you've doubtless heard of some of the animosity towards the Americans in this country. Well, they were on our side. Just imagine if they'd been on somebody else, been against us. And think what it would have been like then. And of course, there was always the equivalent of a German Home Guard who were doing as much as possible to make things awkward for us.
What sort of thing?
You find the odd little troop of Boy Scouts almost, because they were old men and young kids. And they had a couple of rifles or a shotgun between them and would try to resist us. Poor little devil's head, those chaps. I mean, it's natural, isn't it?
But yeah. You said most of them weren't that bad.
No, by the time we got there, I think most of the general civilians, were resigned to the fact that they were going to lose. And you must remember that although the Germans as a whole had to support Hitler, I mean, without the support of the general, he wouldn't have been in power anyway, they had very little say about what happened. And many of them didn't have a great deal of sympathy with him. There's quite a lot of Germans who were opposed to Hitler. And you know, there's quite a large number of Germans in the concentration camps. I mean, the Germans weren't entirely behind him, although their power was directed against him. And so many of the Germans, although we were occupying the country, accepted the fact that they had lost the war and we were moving in.
So, as you move forward, any other memories?
Yeah, the first one was Belsen. We bypassed it, as you probably know from other people. We actually bypassed Belsen. But we passed within sight of it. But you could smell it 20 miles before you reached it, if the wind was in the right direction.
It's a stupid question, but what sort of smell was it?
Burning meat. Just if you leave the bacon under the grill too long and it starts, it really burns. That's what it smelled like.
And you're sure it came from there?
Yeah.
And how close did you get?
About a mile. When we went by, we could see it. We could see the gates. When we went by the There was a ceasefire when we went, so they let us through. But we were still occupied, and the German guards were, they had these watchtowers. And there was a German guard up on these watchtowers, still armed, just watching us go through.
And had you realised what was going on? And if you did, how did you feel?
Well, we knew what was going on, but we didn't know, we'd heard about it. But we didn't really know what it was like. And even then, we didn't really know. We knew that there were concentration camps. This was the first one we'd seen. There were others. This was the only one we saw. I think we saw it because we were following on behind. We were, you know, the tanks were 2 or 3 miles in front of us. And we weren't necessarily following the same roads as the tanks had gone. So it could have been that we saw bits of it that some of the other members of the same regiment wouldn't have seen.
And what was your reaction to this smell? Did you know what it was at the time?
No. No, we didn't know what it was at the time.
So you got there
and realised where it was coming from.
But you didn't know what it was?
You still didn't know really what it was. It was only afterwards when we saw the photos. But we really finally understood what was really happening and how bad it really was.
So then you went past there.
Yeah. Some nights when you still get shelled. Or it's one of those things that you took for granted, I'm afraid. When you've seen that. But you took for granted that somebody was going to fire at you. And they weren't doing any much damage. Very few people got killed by it or wounded by it.
Was there a fear of being... I mean, it was obvious... This is getting up towards April, May, April anyway. Was there a greater fear of being killed when the war was so near the end amongst you, or not?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think it made any difference to anybody. The war was still on. People were still... We didn't know that war was going to finish in May. We didn't know that. So, I mean, as far as we were concerned, we could still be going on right to the other side of Berlin. We didn't know where the Russians were and like that. And we just didn't know where we were going to finish up, and we didn't know when we were going to finish up. It wasn't, I don't think it's until we got to Lindbergh that we realised that the war was just coming to an end.
And anything else before you got to Lindbergh?
Oh, yeah. The only time ever I got a rollicking in the 504th. The only time ever. We'd gone through a town called Westhausen. Westhausen.
Westhausen.
Westhausen. West and H-O-U-S-E-N. Hausen. And we'd gone through it, and one tank had shed its both tracks. And the unit went on, the rest of them went on, and we stayed behind the first group. Well, not all of them. I think there's 3 or 4 of us stayed behind to get this tank mobile again. Dave Finley, myself, Alex Christie, stayed behind to get it to be stretched back on. Anyhow, this later ship night when this happened, so it was the next morning before we got round to put the tracks back on. Got the tracks on, went on up to catch up with the unit, and by then they reached a place called Hessel, H-E-S-S-E-L, Hessel. And remember, we stopped the day, we'd been travelling the day before, we stopped behind this tank overnight, we'd come on, and although we'd eaten, we hadn't had the chance to wash over or anything like that, got the Hessel, and somebody's waiting for me and said, get down to the RSM, his jeep's gone on the blink. His ignition's gone. So I went down, did the ignition on the RSM jeep, got it running again, went back to the first troop to get myself a shave and whatever, and said, you haven't got time for that now, get the tug, we're going again. And we went on. And the Irish then saw me, unshaven for 2 days, unwashed for 2 days, and gave me a right rollicking. Until somebody pointed out to him, the only reason I had a shave was because I was fixing his jeep. He didn't apologise.
Did you resent that?
No. Nah, not really. What's the point? Well, we were pointing to the gentleman. He didn't know.
What was the RSM like? Do you remember his name?
No. He was a new bloke. He wasn't our original. I don't know what happened to our original bloke. He didn't get killed. My God, wounded. Don't know. The original was a great fella. And I think this bloke came in from another unit. I think he came from us first. Not sure. But he wasn't one of ours. He came in from outside. He was alright. And we were alright. You know, although you had sergeant major and things like that, there was no great differentiation between them. This is what I mean about that unit. They were senior members of the same family, sort of thing. Yeah, no, they were all right. They were great. All of them.
So what next? You're moving up towards Lunenburg. Any other incidents?
Not really. I mean, we still get the odd pop right till the end. Got to Lunenburg, and then we've got to find the name of the place. We'd actually moved up to some place on the coast. Can't remember the name of it. And we heard peace had been signed. And everybody said, great, we're going home. And we didn't.
Were there any celebrations on VE Day or night?
Not really, because there wasn't anywhere we'd really go and celebrate, was there? I mean, we somehow or other, they managed to find a few extra rum rations. And somebody managed to find a few bottles and things, you know, but no, because we didn't know what's going to happen. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know what's going to happen to us. And we were in units then. We still weren't a regiment. Other than HQ squadron, we were nowhere near A squadron or B squadron or C squadron. We were. The last time we'd been together as a regiment was in Leeds. This until after war.
So the war finished. Well, no, the war in Europe finished. Yeah. In May, so you were hoping to go home, as you said you didn't. Where were you sent?
I don't think any of us really expect to go home immediately. I mean, people talked about it, but they didn't think it's fitting. Anyway, we wondered what we were going to happen to us, and there was a rumour that we were going to go up into. Oh, sorry. There's a rumour that we were going to go up into Denmark and relieve Denmark. And we were really looking forward to that. And it didn't happen. Not quite. We were sent up into Schleswig-Holstein. And the regiment went to a village called Bredsted. It's only a few miles from the border. And we just sat there. War was over. We gradually lost all our vehicles, all our tanks. They went away. And literally, we were just killing time until we went until something else happened to us. There were rumours that we might go to the Far East, but nobody really took them seriously. And we spent 6 months. Yeah, 6 months till Christmas, just after Christmas. Literally, just killing time.
Did you have any duties at all? I mean,
any guard duties, looking after the stuff, making sure that our own vehicles, you know, the vehicles we still had, the half track, the Vietley, the vehicles were in good order.
You hadn't got the tanks?
They've gone, they were going. We had a couple, I think. I can't remember them all going, actually. They just disappeared, you know, gradually they went. And we were left with their only vehicles. And it was a case of killing time. I
Wasn't that bad for morale?
Not really, because we were well occupied. We had the chance to be well occupied. We started doing courses. I was lucky I did my HND.
In what?
Literally, at my ONC. ONC. So I did my HND, electrical engineering. And then they asked for volunteers who had some sort of qualifications to go away on a teaching course at Schleswig, only a 6-week thing, to teach other people in the unit, you know. And so I said, great, you know, all comes in handy. And I went and did six weeks, learning to teach mathematics and physics.
Like a teacher training course.
Yeah, but only 6 weeks, a short one. And we came back, and somebody else had gone away to do French. And other people had gone away to do other subjects. And we took over a hall in Redstead, and we ran classes. I was running classes in basic mathematics and basic science for some people. I was doing maths up to O level for two or three people. Other people were learning French, were being taught French. I believe Jeff Hayward did French while he was there, because he was engaged to a Belgian girl. And we had lectures by people on the world situation.
Current affairs, like
current that. Affairs generally, yeah.
Who were they by?
Usually by our own officers, but there used to be other officers coming in, or other people coming in from outside, not necessarily officers. They're people who were well informed in that, in a particular field.
Were you aware of, I mean, you came from a political family, were you aware of the election of the Labour government in 45?
Of course. I mean, we were, yes, we were, but I mean, we were encouraged to vote. I mean, we had to get our relatives to vote for us, but the unit made sure that we did so. And in the 5th and 4th Yeomanry, at least, many of the officers were giving very active political advice.
In what way?
You come from Salter, don't you? Well, you're going to vote for Salter, aren't you?
Which party, though?
Generally, they were voting Labour. I mean, in the HQ troop, in the fitness troop, we only had... Well, I mean, obviously, there was a lot of discussion about it. We had one bloke, a corporal, whose name I can never remember, who was a regular soldier. He wasn't 5th and 4th. He was a regular soldier. He was Chepstow apprentice, and he was the only Conservative bloke in that troop who intended to vote Conservative. I mean, we were actively encouraged to vote Labour by, it seemed, everybody.
And you did?
I've always voted Labour. Make no secret of that.
And how did you feel when they won? Because that was, you know, it was the first real win.
Elated, but none of us, I don't think anybody thought it was going to make any difference.
Why?
Not us. Remember, we'd been in the army. And we were very conscious of how money, of what money had been spent on. We were very conscious that the country was bust, and we were very conscious that whoever got in the conditions in this country were going to get no better, not for a long time.
So it was a realistic pleasure.
I think the army were, yeah.
And so how were you, as your time went on, how were you getting on with the Germans in Schleswig-Holstein? Well, in Bredesen.
Well, to start with, we had no fraternisation ban. You know, we weren't a fraternisation ban, and that went on for about still about end of September.
Now, was that honoured?
I think so. Obviously, there's always going to be the odd bodies, always going to be out looking. You want that one, whoever it was, weren't going to be worried. But yes, generally, I think it was.
Did people understand the point of it, or did it have a point?
I don't think many people saw why, really, once the war was over. Except that I believe that many people thought that if it had happened in this country, there would be, even after peace had been officially declared, there would have been a hell of a lot of sabotage and resistance. And I think that a lot of people expected this in Germany, and there wasn't.
Now, after the ban ended, because it didn't stay in that long, did it?
There was a fair amount of people. Once again, a lot. We were there for over 6 or 7. We were there from June until February. And in that time, we were there, the whole, you know, billeted there. And obviously, we saw the same people every day, the same Germans every day, because they lived just outside. And after we were allowed to speak to and fraternise with them, yes, quite the same thing happened there as happened in Ypres. We were adopting the families. I mean, we ran parties for the German kids. I mean, we looked after their kids, you know, we ran parties for the kids, we saw the kids we looked after. And their parents in the way tended to see we were looked after. Yeah, and that tended to be a sort of healthy, friendly relationship grew up between some people. One or two of our lads got married to German girls. Not officially, because they weren't allowed. But one or two of them got married while they were there. And then later on it became allowed, and they made it official.
What about, I mean, at one point, like a lot of German civilians were forced to go and see the film of the concentration camps and things like that. Did that go on in your area in Bredsted?
It went on everywhere. And it went on during the war before it finished. We had an interpreter with us who was a German Jew. I don't know how he got to us, but he was an interpreter attached to us. And he didn't like Germans anyway. He didn't like Nazis anyway. And he made people go by and look at these photos.
Were they photos or film or both?
Photos. We had photos. I don't know where they were films. But we had photos.
And how did they react?
Some of them thought it was dead funny. They really did. They thought it was great, you know. Oh, look at that. Other people were shocked. Other people just didn't believe it. They thought it was all propaganda and it's made up photos. But one or two people thought it was a huge joke. And so this interpreter finished with them.
What would he do to them?
I don't know and I don't want to know. But he took it in view. All his parents had been killed in concentration camps.
No, but I mean, what could he do to them? I mean, how did he get them, if you see what I mean?
Well, he was a soldier and the others weren't. He was armed, they weren't. I mean, I don't know what he did to them. But I know that a lot of civilians were dead scared of him.